Well, hello and welcome to tonight's class, to everyone joining us from afar, and to Robin on the line. I'm really excited to be teaching this one tonight. This is a course on breakthrough results, and the whole idea is taking different ideas from all of the different topics that we've been discussing and applying them in your life in ways that creates breakthroughs, things that sort of take you beyond, maybe a little bit beyond where you felt stuck before. And tonight's class addresses a topic where many people are stuck and don't know they're stuck. You don't know this is the reason that you're stuck. So one of my favorite bits of wisdom that I've ever heard in life from one of my favorite teachers is the idea that as human beings, we kind of know what we know. And then we know what we don't know. And that's the scope of the universe that we think we understand. So I know that I know about nutrition, and I know that I know about driving a car in America, and I know that I know about basketball, and I know that I don't know about fly fishing, and I know that I don't know about bridge. And mostly we look at our lives, and we say, okay, I've got these problems. There's some areas where I'm stuck. And we really believe that the solution is to take stuff that we know that we don't know and put it into the know folder. So imagine you've got two folders, a folder called this is what I know, there's another folder called this is what I don't know, and of course you know that you don't know it. So you know that you don't know how to play Parcheesi, or you know that you don't know Sanskrit, and you know that you don't know how to speak Arabic. What's interesting is that taking stuff from the folder, I know that I don't know it, and moving it into the I know it folder doesn't usually make a difference. And that's where most of our efforts at change come from. Like, I know that I should eat healthy, and I don't know how to. Well, let me figure that out, and I'm going to put that into the know folder, and then once I know how to eat healthy, then I'll be healthier. It's not usually where radical change comes from. Radical change usually comes from a different folder, and it's the you don't know that you don't know it folder. The things that you don't know, and you don't know that you don't know them. You've never even asked the question. And when ideas come into our lives, from that space of what we don't know that we don't know because we never even considered it before, that's usually where real power is. That's usually where real paradigm shifts occur. So this is super, super true in many spheres of life, spirituality, family, relationships, business, where this is what like an epiphany is. An epiphany is usually when you realize something that you didn't know you didn't know. And I think nutrition is a little more conservative. I don't really believe that a nutrition topic or this class is going to, you know, create like a life-changing epiphany. But I do think that in many ways, the topic of tonight's class is the key to what keeps a lot of people stuck, and they don't know it, and they don't know that they don't know it. So if you're someone who struggles with weight loss, or if you struggle with inflammatory symptoms like heartburn or indigestion, or you get lots of skin breakouts, if you have trouble sleeping at night, if you have trouble with your mood, if depression is an issue for you, there is a factor involved in all of these different conditions and more that flies underneath the radar, and that's what we're talking about tonight. And that factor is gastrointestinal health. It's GI health, the actual health of your gut. The gut is so central to the functioning of every system in the human body, and so completely ignored from a functional perspective in our culture, that for some people, beginning to understand gut health and doing things that engineer superior gut health can actually create a profound transformation. So up until tonight, in the previous six classes, we've really covered a lot of general information that I consider to be very useful, and there's been some practical applications. We've talked about hunter-gatherer nutrition and eating like a caveman, and we've talked about ideal movement patterns, and we talked about the mind-body connection, and all that stuff's really great. And then our previous class, of course, was on personalized nutrition. But I still consider all of that to sort of be like foundational, or it's groundwork. There's little principles that you can apply here and there, and I think it's actually essential to gain the perspective that it offers. Tonight is heavy lifting in a good, good way. The things that we're going to apply from tonight's class, it's the sort of stuff where you take it on, and if you really do it right, you can notice a profound change in how you feel within 2 or 4 weeks and maybe get a remarkable breakthrough. And this class sort of comes in two parts because the class that follows this completes this class in many ways. But even just the content from tonight's class alone, when applied, has some really profound transformational power. So I'm excited to share it. I'm going to dive in with that. So the way it's going to go is I'll start off, and I'm going to paint a picture of gut health and why it's so important. That'll sort of be our foundation, our theoretical foundation. And then I'm going to talk about some specific stuff that we can do. So to start with, when I say the gut, what I mean is really the small intestine and the large intestine. So if you picture your body right now, or if you look down at your body, you've got your stomach, and it sits underneath your rib cage on the left side of your body. And then your stomach has a little valve called the pyloric sphincter that keeps your stomach separate from your small intestine. And the stomach isn't the site where a lot of digestive magic happens. Your stomach is actually a relatively simple organ. The stomach is kind of like an acid bath for food. When you eat food, it goes into your stomach, and your stomach secretes a lot of acid. It's hydrochloric acid, stomach acid. And there's some other chemicals in that acid that help break down the food a little bit. But a lot of the purpose of the stomach is to kill bacteria and fungi and other nasty little bugs that can be in your food. That's what all that acid is for. And it sort of prepares food for digestion. So we're not going to look at the stomach too much tonight. We will come back to the stomach and talk a little bit about what you can do to improve gastrointestinal health from the perspective of the stomach. But the really interesting part of the gut starts after food gets through that pyloric sphincter and down into your small intestine. So continuing to visualize, you've got your stomach, it's underneath your rib cage, and it kind of looks like it has this, you know, funny, sort of like a quarter moon shape, and it sits off to the side, and then it feeds into this tube called the small intestine. And the small intestine is in some ways the most interesting organ in the whole body. Maybe the brain is more interesting, but below the neck, the small intestine is a fascinating space. First of all, it's very, very long. It's 20, 22, 23 feet long, and it's an incredibly intricate organ system. The intestine has as many nerves as the spinal cord. Astonishing. It's incredible nerve density in the gut. There are more neurotransmitters in the intestine than there are in the brain. It's actually an incredible site of neurotransmitter density. And about 80% of your immune system actually occupies your intestines. 80% of your white blood cells. It's called the GALT, the gut-associated lymphatic tissue. So a tremendous amount of your immunological tissue is right down there in your gut. So it's fascinating when you think about your body and you think about all the stuff that it does. You know, emotions are important, and obviously your nervous system runs and controls literally everything in your immune system. My God, that's not only what keeps you healthy, but the immune system is what's involved in all inflammation. And heart disease is inflammatory, cancer is inflammatory, every disease has some sort of inflammatory connection. Well, 80% of that immune system is right there in the gut. So the gut is the site of so much of the stuff that figures critically in the health and wellness concerns that occupy the top of our minds. And yet, we don't learn very much about gut health, and there really isn't a tremendous focus on gut health. Well, it actually goes even deeper than that. This 22 feet of small intestine, not only is all this tissue there, but if you think about it, this organ system is in many ways the bedrock or the foundation on which the entire rest of your body is built. So in class one, we went through this idea that what you are is you're this 100 trillion cell symphony. Well, that's not what you are. That's what your body is. You're the consciousness. But your body is this 100 trillion cell symphony. And those cells are constantly dying and being reborn. They're constantly breaking down and being recreated, breaking down and being recreated. And what's happening, of course, is that the food you eat is being used for this constant ongoing process of regeneration of your physical being, your physical self. And it's a remarkable process, and it's astonishing, and the intelligence that coordinates it is literally mind-blowing. But if you stop for a minute and really think about the simplicity of the idea that you eat chicken and apples and spinach and steak, and somehow that becomes your body. It becomes nerve cells and liver cells and all this functional, real magic, this phenomenal creation that the human physical form is. Well, where does the translation take place? It starts in the gut. One of my favorite things I ever heard said by a nutritionist is, he said, nutrition is boring until you grasp the miracle that things that are simple, like a turkey breast, go into our body, disappear into the universe, and then reemerge as us. And it's like, it's kind of mind-blowing. How does something sitting on your plate that looks like a green bean end up turning into something as fabulous as your biceps muscles that can do all those amazing things? Well, it begins in this gastrointestinal tract. It begins in the small intestine. So much of the job of the small intestine is to take food, and food is what you swallow, and begin to break it down into nutrients. And nutrients are the building blocks that your system is ultimately going to use to remanufacture all of the pieces of you. And those building blocks have to be processed in very specific ways. And then after they're processed, they have to be absorbed. So the small intestine not only is the site of a lot of the processing of food into nutrients, actual nutrients, it's also the site where those nutrients then get drawn into your body and ultimately packaged and sent where they're supposed to go so that all of your various systems can use those nutrients to rebuild themselves. So we can see that there's a tremendous amount happening in the small intestine. It's the initial site of the translation of food into the physical you. And the reason there's so much immunological tissue down there is that, of course, as you're swallowing food, if you think about it, it's a funny thought, kind of creepy to some people. The inside of your gut is the outside of your body. There's a tube that starts in your mouth and ends at the bottom of you, and that tube runs down your esophagus, it opens up into your stomach, turns into your gut, and then runs out the back of you. And so that tube is continuous with the outside world, and it's a potential site for all sorts of creepy stuff from the outside world that we don't want, virus, bacteria, fungus, to invade into the inside of the body. And if that were to happen, we would get sick. So as the gut is responsible for this remarkable task of breaking down and absorbing nutrition with the ultimate destiny of that nutrition becoming our physical self, it also has to surveil against potential invasion of the body by microbes. So there's this tremendous immunological density there for that. There's all this phenomenal chemistry taking place to allow for the breakdown and the absorption. And then I don't know if science has really come up with a good explanation for why there's so much neurotransmitter density in the gut. Many people, and so much neurological density, many people believe that the gut is actually sort of a second brain. So, you know, you may have heard the stories that ancient dinosaurs had brains in their heads and brains in their tails, and it's a true story. Some of the very large ancient dinosaurs, they had two brains. They had a brain that controlled the lower body and a brain that controlled the upper body. And historically, we've thought of ourselves as, of course, only having one brain, the one that sits on the top of our shoulders. But it seems as though there may actually be a tremendous amount of information processing and intelligence in the human gut that we don't understand. It's interesting that we all talk about gut feelings, and it's something that you see across cultures. It's not just an English colloquialism. That idea of gut feelings, people say, trust your gut. And that's not just in America. It's not just something in our language. It's actually, you find it all over the world, people understand the idea of gut feelings. And emotions seem to affect us profoundly in the gut. If someone really hurts you and you say, I feel like I got punched in the gut. And sometimes if you've ever really been through intense negative emotion, you actually have felt all physical disturbance in your gastrointestinal tract. We frequently register excitement in the gut, the whole butterflies in the stomach effect. If you get nervous, you can feel it very much in your gut. So human emotion is felt and likely even processed in this tissue. And there's an intimate connection that's just beginning to be fleshed out between what your neurochemistry does in your body and what your neurochemistry does in your brain, your neurochemistry being Prozac, endorphins, dopamine, the chemicals that regulate emotion. And so they go in the body, so they go in the brain. So the neurochemical activity in the gut affects the neurochemistry in the brain in ways that are not clearly understood, but highly significant and very, very interesting. And so not only is the gut intimately involved in the recreation of the physical you, intimately involved in making sure that nasty little microbes and buggers and the other things that we don't want inside of us don't get inside of us, it also has some sort of fascinating connection to thinking and to emotion. So the gut is where it's at in a nutshell. And the more we understand this tissue system and the more we learn how to bring the gut into a state of healthy harmony, the more we're going to thrive on absolutely every level. So I want to continue a little bit with the structure of the gut and how it works. I want to move down from the small intestine into the large intestine. If you trace on your body, we started with the stomach right under the rib cage. We move towards the center of the body, which is where the pyloric sphincter is. That's the little valve between the stomach and the small intestine. And then we went into the small intestine. The small intestine, I'm sure you've seen pictures, it's loads of squiggles. So it sort of squiggles all around across your abdomen in each direction. And if you take your finger and you squiggle it across your abdomen in each direction, you'll eventually get down to the lower right side of your abdomen. And in that lower right side of the abdomen, you'll come to the region where the small intestine actually meets the large intestine. That's actually also interestingly where your appendix is and where your cecum is. You may have heard about the cecum and the appendix. They're down there as well. Well, the small intestine meets the large intestine. And then the large intestine, it isn't longer than the small intestine. The small intestine is like 22 feet long. It's just much wider. And if you want to picture your large intestine, it runs up the right side of your body, up to about the height of your liver, below your rib cage. It then runs across your body over to the left side, and then runs back down your body on the left side, and then eventually goes out the back of you. So the large intestine, interestingly, is involved in the absorption of water, and it's also involved in the packaging and the excretion of waste. And this isn't quite as magical a topic or quite as cool as I think all the fascinating stuff that's going on in the small intestine is. But the large intestine is critically important, too, because the packaging and the excretion of waste from the body is an utterly critical process. Our cells make waste all the time. And a lot of what we eat is also just waste material. It's things that we don't want inside of our systems. And it's almost unimaginable, and we don't need to go into too much detail, but there is a war going on in the gut all the time to keep us alive. There's all sorts of little evil things that are trying to get in our bodies, and we're killing them off, and as you kill them off, they just get, you know, sent down the chute and excreted as feces. When this system breaks down, you really subject the body to a tremendous toxic burden. And a healthy large intestine is consistently packaging and excreting waste, packaging and excreting waste. And as that waste leaves the body in a relatively smooth and even flow, all of the toxic material that's packaged up with that waste is taken out of you. Now, as the health of the large intestine begins to break down, toxic material tends to stay inside the large intestine for a longer time and re-enter the body. So the health of the large intestine is critical, too. It's not a place where you're absorbing the nutrition that goes and makes you. It's a place that's largely all about getting out of you the stuff you don't want inside of you. So that's a picture of the gut in a nutshell. And what I want to do now is start up again with the stomach, and I want to talk about various things that can go wrong with GI health as we move from the top of the gut down to the bottom, and then the measures that you want to take to correct those things. So the stomach is the simplest place. And really, when it comes to stomach health, the biggest thing that goes wrong that's easy to fix is the underproduction of stomach acid, the underproduction of hydrochloric acid. It's fascinating because we live in a country where heartburn is epidemic, and you've got GERD running rampant. If you don't know what GERD is, it's gastroesophageal reflux disease. And many people have many different levels of this issue. Some people it's just with certain meals. Some people they get it all the time. And usually the medical solution is, well, there's too much stomach acid. Let's give the person antacids. They're regurgitating acid, and it's burning their esophagus. Let's give them antacids. Well, frequently the problem is actually they don't have enough stomach acid. So I've treated many people with heartburn and put them on supplemental stomach acid, had them actually add stomach acid to their diet, and their heartburn goes away. Well, how's that possible? Remember, the stomach is supposed to be an acid bath. And when food enters the stomach, it's meant to sit in this acid cocktail in order to be stripped of all of its microbes and prepared for digestion. Well, when there's inadequate acid in the stomach, food will sit in the stomach too long, or the breakdown process of that food won't proceed the way that it's supposed to, and you'll actually get an event called pyloric systole. You may be familiar with the word systole from the human heart. Systole is when the heart beats and pops blood out. Well, the stomach does the same thing, and that's actually what causes you to vomit. It's an event called pyloric systole. It's the bottom of the stomach contracting. And when food has been sitting in the stomach in a way that's inappropriate or too long, the stomach will actually contract and cause a regurgitation. And if you're nauseous, you get a full-fledged vomiting. But many people experience this same type of subtle pyloric systole as a consequence of improperly digested food from inadequate hydrochloric acid, and that's what their acid reflux disease is. And sometimes within a week of going on hydrochloric acid, and one other supplement I'll talk about in a bit, people experience a remission or even actually the end of their heartburn. And it's fascinating because all of the medical drugs and over-the-counter drugs that we use to treat heartburn that lower stomach acid, this is a very dangerous game. That stomach acid is a critical part of the immune system, and it's also a critical part of the digestive system. And in many cases, again, low stomach acid is the problem, and you're taking a drug that's actually exacerbating the problem. So if you're someone who does have any form of heartburn, I really, really encourage you to do two things. One, modify your diet to a whole foods diet and identify which whole foods trigger your heartburn and get off of them and just do this for 2 weeks. And if you're on a medication, strongly talk to your doctor about weaning off that medication, that heartburn medication, for like a month just to see how it goes. And over that month, you want to try something called betaine HCL, BETAINE, HCL. You can find this on Amazon or on Google. And Pure Encapsulations makes a very, very good brand, but betaine HCL is easy to make. Most brands are good. You can find it at your local health food store, betaine HCL. And add that into your daily supplement regimen. And the way you want to do it is you want to start off taking one capsule with each meal. And if you don't feel worse, if you don't get more heartburn, because you don't want to overload yourself, you can go up to one capsule with breakfast, two with lunch, one with dinner. Don't go over that. And adding that extra stomach acid, you may find it really remediates your heartburn. So I don't want to dwell too much on the stomach. Let's move on to the small intestine. I think it's the more interesting region. More stuff can kind of get gummed up in the small intestine. One of the first things that can go wrong in the small intestine is an insufficiency of digestive enzymes. And we've already talked a little bit about that in our supplementation class, so I won't belabor it. But if you do have digestive issues and heartburn can be involved in this, you may want to try a supplemental digestive enzyme to help out with the small intestine health. Well, one of the most interesting things that occurs in the small intestine, and I want to spend more time on this, is frequently you actually have situations where people's small intestines don't just digest and absorb food, they actually attack that food as if the food were an incoming microbe, as if the food were a virus or a bacterium or a fungus. So I mentioned before that 80% of the immune system is in the gut, and it's there to surveil the food that you eat and make sure that you don't get like a worm that comes in and survives the stomach acid on a piece of broccoli and then can invade your body and set up shop. And the reason you need the immune system here is imagine, you know, what microbes like. Like, think about mold and bacteria. They like it warm, they like it moist, and they like it dark. Well, inside the gut, it's warm, moist, and dark, and there's an endless flow of nutrition. There's what you're eating. So you can see this is actually an ideal environment for microbes to set up shop. And the body doesn't want microbes to set up shop, so it's vigilant. Vigilant. The immune system sort of surveils the inside of the small intestine with tremendous vigilance. And sometimes, for a variety of reasons that we'll get into, the immune system can get a little bit trigger happy and can start actually attacking the food that you eat as though it's a bacterium or a fungus. So what this does is it creates inflammation. And inflammation is the fallout of immunological activity. When your immune system goes to war, when it targets something that shouldn't be inside of you, it releases barrages of destructive chemicals. It's interesting. You may have had hydrogen peroxide that you've poured on cuts, or your mom may have done it for you when you were little. You get a cut and you pour peroxide on it and it kind of bubbles. You actually have white blood cells that make hydrogen peroxide. And they literally have like these things called vesicles. They're like little water balloons of hydrogen peroxide that they shoot at bacteria. It's fascinating. Your immune cells make chlorine bleach. And they make all sorts of other stuff, really powerful stuff. So when the immune system goes to war, it releases all these chemicals, and some of those chemicals cause tissue swelling, and some of those chemicals, you know, can damage our own cells. And that's really what inflammation is. Inflammation is when our body's own immune response starts to have fallout and do damage to our cells. Loads and loads and loads of people have a situation where their immune systems are constantly attacking the very food that they're eating in the small intestine, and creating this inflammation throughout the small intestine. Well, once you've got inflammation in your small intestine, some interesting and unfortunate things follow. One, the inflammation spreads because there's so many white blood cells in the small intestine that the chemistry that activates those white blood cells tends to turn on white blood cells in other places. It spreads up the gut frequently to the sinuses. A lot of sinus congestion, seasonal allergies, other sorts of weird sinus issues are actually gastrointestinal inflammation. It can spread out and create autoimmune diseases inside the body. It can even manifest in the skin in things like eczema, because when anywhere in the body is a little more inflamed, everywhere in the body is a little more inflamed. Inflammation tends to increase globally. If it increases locally, it tends to increase globally. So an increase in gastrointestinal inflammation creates an increase in systemic inflammation. Now, systemic inflammation, and this is the big one, is probably the biggest factor that we need to think about with heart disease. Heart disease is not about cholesterol and triglycerides. And this is very well established. You can have high cholesterol and never, ever, ever develop heart disease. You'll never develop atherosclerotic plaque and you'll never have blood clots break off. But when you combine cholesterol with inflammation, it's very dangerous. Inflammation causes cholesterol to plaque together and eventually causes those cholesterol plaques to break off and create adverse events. And when that happens in the body, it's a heart attack, and when it happens in the brain, it's a stroke. So inflammation is the thing that we need to be thinking about, and medicine is beginning to move in this direction. It's beginning to recognize that inflammation is a much bigger deal, and we've way overhyped cholesterol in the whole role of heart disease. Well, inflammation starts in the gut. Most of the immune system is there. Inflammation is inappropriate immune system activity. When there's inappropriate immune system activity in the gut, you're going to get it everywhere. So if we can control gastrointestinal inflammation, and the stomach acid and the digestive enzymes can help, but if we can control gastrointestinal inflammation, we can do profound things to improve the health of the body as a whole. So how do you go about improving GI inflammation? Well, there are a lot of different ways to get in touch with foods that you may be allergic to that may be causing these inflammatory reactions in your gut. You can actually get food allergy testing done. You can go to, it's very easy to do, you can Google it and you can find somewhere in your area that will do blood-based food allergy testing. And there's probably some worth in this. But what I really like for people to do, and it's something I do with the people that I really work with in a more detailed fashion, but you can do it in an easy fashion on your own, there are a few really common triggers for GI inflammation, triggers that most people have. And the most common ones are dairy foods, wheat-based foods, soy-based foods, sugar, and non-organic corn. Because non-organic corn is generally genetically modified. And if you can strip out of your diet the soy, the sugar, the wheat-based foods, the dairy, and the corn for about 10 days, you may begin to notice a profound change in your energy levels and your quality of health. And if you do strip those foods out for 10 days, and I mean strip them out, I mean become a religious label reader, none of any of that stuff, and you start to feel a lot better, there's a very good chance you're allergic to one of those foods and that you're experiencing a cycle of inflammation as the consequence of that food. And what you want to do at that point is do what's called a challenge. If you really want to be eating those foods that you may be allergic to, try eating a lot of one of them and then wait a couple days and then eat a lot of another one and wait a couple days and then eat a lot of another one and see when your body reacts. So for 10 days, no wheat, no sugar, no dairy, no soy, no GMO corn. After 10 days, you say to yourself, you know what, I'm feeling much better, and I don't want to eat this way for the rest of my life, although you can certainly eat this way for the rest of your life. If you're feeling better, you may want to. Eat a bunch of wheat. See how you feel. You may feel really rotten, and if you feel really rotten, it's a great indicator that your body doesn't handle wheat products well. Eat a bunch of wheat. You don't feel rotten, wait another couple, 2 or 3 days, and eat a bunch of dairy, and then see how you feel. And if you feel really rotten, it's a good indicator that your body doesn't handle dairy products really well. This is such a simple, simple test, and it's something that's really, truly worth doing for yourself. And even if you never do this challenge, even if you never formally experiment to determine which specific foods you're allergic to, I can't emphasize the value enough of giving this dietary shift a shot for 7 to 10 days. Now, taking this on can sometimes be a little overwhelming, and if you'd like to, definitely give me a call. We can certainly talk about putting this into practice in person, or shoot me an email and I can send you some more detailed stuff. But it's really not that complicated. You just become a religious label reader, and you go to restaurants, and you commit yourself to this idea of doing a hypoallergenic, this is called a hypoallergenic diet, for 7 to 10 days. So this can be a godsend for people with inflammatory conditions, and it can also be a great one for weight loss. And just to review, so far what we've talked about in terms of improving GI health, the first line, the simplest line, is increase your stomach acid and increase your digestive enzymes. And both of those come from supplements. You want to get betaine HCL, or you want to get digestive enzyme supplements, which we talked about in the last class, and we actually have those enzyme supplements in our Re-Evolution store if you are interested. This is a food-based solution, which I like. You don't have to spend any extra money to reduce inflammation, and it's purely food-based. So 7 to 10 days on this anti-inflammatory diet is awesome. And I do think it is probably the most profound thing that about half the people I work with can do for their health. So with that said, and this could be a huge topic, these anti-inflammatory diets, hypoallergenic diets, I really encourage you, if this rings a bell, to reach out to me. I have a nice article written on this that I can send you that goes into some more detail, and we can also set up some time to talk about it in person. I actually want to move on to the next most important topic in GI health, which is another thing that is hugely neglected, and it's related, and that's what's called flora balance. So there's one aspect to the healthy gut that I didn't touch on yet. We sort of went through and talked about all the things that a healthy gut does and what the healthy gut contains. And the part I didn't talk about yet is what's called the normal flora, or the healthy bacteria, the probiotic bacteria in the gut. And you may have heard about probiotics. They have come more and more under scrutiny in the medical establishment, and they're more and more present in the media. So you have a lot of little probiotic cocktails out there now, like Activia yogurts and things like that. And what the idea behind probiotics are is there are actual bacteria that are a normal, healthy part of the human gastrointestinal system. So in your gut, you're meant to have your own cells, of course, but you're also meant to have bacteria. You're meant to have really super healthy bacteria. And what those super healthy bacteria do, they do a lot of great things for you. One, they're a huge part of your immune system. So we talked about how the gut is this great environment that fungus and all sorts of other microbes can set up shop in. Well, one of the things that makes it hard for invading organisms to take up residence in your gut and undermine your health is that all the little nooks and crannies in your gut are mostly filled with bacteria. There is an immense number of healthy bacteria in a healthy gut. In fact, in a healthy body, there are more bacteria in the gut than there are human cells. So we talked about the fact you have 100 trillion cells in your whole body. In a healthy body, there are way more than 100 trillion bacteria in your gut, little bugs hanging out everywhere that are good for you. These are healthy, healthy bacteria. And not only are they a critical part of your immune system, they actually help with digestion. They break down the food that you eat, and they make vitamins. So our body really works with these bacteria. It's what's called a symbiotic relationship. The bacteria, of course, need us to live, and we need them to live. And if you don't have any probiotic bacteria, you're a really, really sick person. Well, most people don't have enough probiotic bacteria. And part of the reason for that is overexposure to antibiotics. So as human beings, we've been taking antibiotics for, you know, 50, 60 years now. And every time people get sick, there's sort of this instinct to give them antibiotics. And antibiotics are tremendously overprescribed. And when you take antibiotics, they don't just kill the bacterium that may be causing you to not feel good. They also kill up the healthy bacteria in your gut. Well, when the healthy bacteria in the gut get killed off, it sort of creates what you could think of as an open habitat for invasion. So imagine you've got, this is into the human world, we're going to go to an analogy now. Imagine you've got this really rich, really fertile land with all sorts of natural resources, and it's like a perfect habitat, and it's completely full of people, and the people are actually really good at defending their turf. And then all of a sudden, all those people just get wiped out. They're not there anymore. And that land is in the middle of a warlike culture. Well, what's going to happen, right? That warlike culture is going to say, oh my God, there's this sweet land that we get to occupy. And they're going to stream in there, and they're going to set up shop, and they're going to build fortresses and houses and trench works and really occupy this space, and then it's going to be hard to get rid of them. This is a very apt analogy to the situation that a lot of people, millions and millions and millions of people, have going on in their gastrointestinal tract. The GI tract is such a great space for microbial life. Warm, dark, moist, lots of nutrition flowing through it. And when the normal flora, when the healthy bacteria are killed, and they're killed not only by antibiotics, they're killed by fluorine in our water, they're killed by chlorine exposure, there's so much stuff that we're putting through our bodies completely ignorant of its effect on these bacteria in our GI tract, then you get this flow of other parasites, fungi, nasty bacteria, parasitic worms, all sorts of stuff, and they truly set up shop in the gut. And it sounds disgusting, but it's really, really real. And if you run tiny little cameras into most people's guts, you find an unimaginable collection of nasty, nasty little buggers in there. And thank God the human body is so resilient, and thank God we're able to sort of fight a war of attrition with these things and keep them from taking us over and killing us. But they exert a real cost on health. And I would say of the people that I work with who are actually sick, a high percentage, 30-40%, respond very favorably to a program that's designed to eliminate this kind of, it really is an infection, it's a chronic infection of pernicious microbes in the gastrointestinal tract that is largely set up by the elimination of the healthy microbes. Now, what's so interesting is that when you've got unhealthy bugs in your GI tract, they don't just sit in the gut. They actually bore holes through the wall of the gut, and those holes let the blood outside your gut flow into the gut, and that blood doesn't know how to not attack food. That blood recognizes all food as a bacterium, so it actually increases inflammation and increases food allergies. So there's an intimate connection between this condition, which is called dysbiosis, and food allergies. Dysbiosis means that instead of the healthy probiotic bacteria in your gut, you've got dysfunctional, you've got bad bacteria in your gut. So this dysbiosis is a really entrenched issue, and it's very, very, very common in our culture. And it's a cause of a tremendous amount of ill health. And if you have dysbiosis, it's very difficult for you to move in a positive direction physically or emotionally without dealing with this underlying problem. So how do you deal with it? Well, one thing, if you go on reevolution.com, if you want more detailed information, I actually have an article underneath tutorials called Dealing with Candida, and it explains more details about all of this. And Candida is one of the organisms that's most commonly responsible for this dysbiosis. In fact, it's generally the major player in most people's dysbiosis, is an overgrowth of this yeast called Candida albicans. And what you got to do is you got to get rid of it. You got to get this thing out of you, root and branch. And the way you go about doing it is a combination of diet and supplements. You have to change your diet in a way where you don't introduce the foods that negative microorganisms thrive on. You have to starve them. And then you also have to introduce agents of some sort that will kill these little buggers off. And you can use medical drugs, and some medical drugs I actually think make some sense in this particular context, but natural supplements can usually do the trick. So if what I've been talking about sounds like it describes you, and if you've got food allergies, if you've got chronic sinus conditions, if you have a lot of GI upset, lots of gas, bloating, it's hard for you to digest, especially if you have poor stool quality, again, not a sexy fun topic, but a good one to understand. If you frequently have small and hard to pass stools, or if you have rabbit-like stools, like little types of pellets frequently when you go to the bathroom, there is a very, very good chance that you're dealing with this dysbiosis condition. And if you're going to move forward, you probably need to address it. So if you want to go about addressing it, there is a really good book called The Candida Yeast Answer Book that you may want to read. You want to pick it up. It's very comprehensive. It's a beautifully written text, the Candida Yeast Answer Book. But I would recommend that you definitely, definitely call me and book an appointment. This is one of the few issues that I tell people not to try to deal with on their own. So I always like to mention it in the course of this class because usually I find one or two people taking it remotely or whatever who this registers for. And if you've got this going on, it's something that is very... it's not simple to deal with, but the path to dealing with it is clear. And if you take the right steps, it will resolve for you, and there's tremendous freedom on the other side of it. So to sum things up, we've looked at a few different topics in gastrointestinal health. We've looked at stomach acid. We've looked at enzymes. We've looked at food allergies, and we've looked at dysbiosis. This is really just beginning to scratch the surface of GI health because it's such a rich and complex area of the body that you can explore it in tremendous detail and come to understand all the different ways that it's impacting so many different facets of how your body works now and thrives. But we don't want a confusing avalanche of detail. We want simplicity. So what's the simplicity to take away from tonight? Well, one thing, this is another great case for the whole foods argument, and especially the no-processed sugars and the no-processed flours. Because the processed sugars and processed flours are the biggest contributors to gastrointestinal inflammation. That's one of the biggest reasons I don't like people consuming them. They're also the preferred food for candida and other pernicious microbes. So for people who have got this situation going on where there's systemic dysfunction stemming from GI dysfunction, if you're eating the processed sugars and the processed flour-based foods, you're really exacerbating it. You're fanning the flames. It's not just a question of taking in calories that aren't good for you, or even of taking in nutrition that really your system doesn't know how to turn into a healthy body. You're literally pouring fuel on the fire. You're contributing directly to really what I would say is probably the core of your dysfunctions, the core of your struggles. So it's a great argument for that. I also love talking about GI health from the perspective of this mind-body connection. You know, so goes the mind, so goes the body to some extent, so goes the mind. And when the gut is unhealthy, it's very hard to feel good mentally. It's hard to have good mental acuity. It's hard to focus. It's hard to think clearly. It's hard to, you know, feel positive emotion because there's this tremendous neurological and emotional density of the gut. And most people who are feeling bad from a standpoint of their mood or who feel like they've lacked focus, lack mental acuity, it doesn't occur to them there's something actually going on in, you know, below my stomach in that region of my body. But frequently there is. And frequently improving GI health becomes this beautiful portal that you can pass through where the rest of your health and well-being begins to fall into line. So what are the rules of good GI health? Well, I mentioned the elimination diet. It's a great one. Really, they're the rules of healthy living in general. You know, the biggest one, the processed foods are devastating to gastrointestinal health. You really do have to eat enough fiber, and the fiber should come from a variety of sources. You want to get fiber from berries. Berries contain something called soluble fiber, which helps move food through the gut. It's very, very, very good for you. You also want to consume plenty of leafy greens, and if you can, consume beans. Beans are an awesome source of fiber. They have a type of fiber called resistant starch that is especially useful in helping you move the bowels and get waste out of you. Another great thing that you can do for your GI health is to eat papaya. Papaya is incredibly rich in digestive enzymes, and it can really help with digestion, and it can help move things down through the gut. Being parsimonious about antibiotic use is a great takeaway. Really, really be cautious about taking antibiotics. There is a long-term cost to them that we are not well educated about. And if you've taken a lot of antibiotics in the past, or if you know you're going to be taking antibiotics soon, you really want to replenish the healthy normal flora with a probiotic. Probiotics are supplements that contain healthy bacteria. So they come in many forms. You can buy kefir. Kefir is like a probiotic yogurt drink that you can get at the store, not during your allergenic diet. BioK is another, it's a dairy-based yogurt probiotic. You can buy at Whole Foods. It's great. I recommend people really vary up the probiotics they take as much as they possibly can. We have a probiotic in our store. I like it. Not the only one that I take. There's a company called Natren that makes really great probiotics. And the reason it's good to take lots of different probiotics is you're supposed to have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not many thousands, of different species of healthy bacteria in the gut, and a lot of our medical drugs kill them off. And if you take varieties of probiotics, you're going to replenish that variety down in the gastrointestinal tract. So those are all simple tips. Oh, and drink enough water. Always great for you. Drink enough water. Water is great for the gut, too. Those are all simple tips that can move you in the direction of improving GI health. And from any individual class like this, you should never feel like you need to take away more than, you know, a couple interesting things to remember and then two or three action steps. What I hope this class does, beyond the couple things to remember and the action steps, is make you think a little bit differently about some of the health challenges that are confronting you and really become a gateway for deeper learning. Because if this GI health issue, if you hear something about your life, if you hear something about yourself in this, it would really benefit you to learn a lot more about gastrointestinal health and how to improve it more than we can really deal with in one individual class. And if that's you, email me at info@vaughngray.com and I will send you some additional resources. And as always, you can also email in your questions. So that is a wrap for tonight's class. We went a little bit off the course syllabus, but I reorganized things midway. And in the next class, we're going to deal with detox, with detoxification, which is a highly related topic. And then after that, we wrap everything up. The course is over and done with. So we're going to do a bringing everything together and moving forward class. So with that said, let me pause. If there's a question, I will happily take it.
No, I don't have any.
Okay, that's great. Well, then, good night to you and everybody listening on MP3. All the best, and I always love to hear from you guys whenever you get in contact with me, which none of you do anywhere near enough. Please email me, let me know what's going on, ask some questions, and we will meet again next week.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Have a great night.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.